This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had to be everyday crime.
Night transmissions. Tonight our first segment is from the radio show Escape, an episode called Wild Oranges, dating back to September the 28th of 1949, which is based on a novella by Joseph Hergesheimer, who, although pretty well forgotten now, was one of the most popular writers in America during the 1920s. Anyway, if you're interested, the text can be obtained by going to my website, www.nighttransmissions.com. When you get there, click on the button that says The Shows in the navigation menu, which will be over to your left. It'll kind of look like a book spine. Then, when you get to the next page by doing that, click on show number 26. Then down at the bottom of this page, there's a section called Downloads, from where you can download a PDF copy of Wild Oranges. I do this quite a bit, really. Some of you may find it worth checking out the website for every show just to see what ancillary material I've posted there. Everything from, well, like this, PDFs of a classic novel, sometimes films, no luck there. Well, pretty much anything. I think it's worth checking out.
Tonight, with Van Heflin as John Woolfolk, we escape to a deserted sandpit off the coast of Georgia, where terror stalks under the Spanish moss, as Joseph Hergesheimer tells it in Wild Oranges.
What could have appeared more innocent of danger than that barren, low-lying shore of southern Georgia? What could have seemed less laden with terror than that lovely little cove, so tranquil and well-sheltered, so warmly bathed in late afternoon sun as we dropped the anchor of our ketch and prepared our mooring? And yet there was something. First, it was an aroma. A grove of wild orange trees in late bloom grew defiantly amid the tangled undergrowth of the shore. The scent was strong and exotic and heady. And as I smelled it, I felt a vague uneasiness. Then, as I watched the shore and Halbert, my sailor, unfurl the sails, the mirror of the cove was shattered by a movement. At first, I thought it was a fish leaping and playing in the water. Came round a spit of land from an inner bay, and then Halbert was beside me.
That's queer, sir. I would have bet there was nobody within miles of here, but that's someone swimming.
Yes. That's a girl.
Aye, sir. She'll be surprised when she discovers us, no doubt.
And embarrassed. See, she swims well, doesn't she?
Yes, sir.
She had been born in the water.
Oh, she's seen us.
Yes, yes. Now she's running away. Hey, that sprint would win an Olympic race, huh?
Yes, sir.
I wonder what she's doing here, where she comes from.
Perhaps there, sir.
Where?
Through the trees. There's a house there. You can hardly see it. I spotted it a moment ago.
Yes, yes, there is. I don't, but it's a ruin. It's rotting away. No one could have lived in that since the Civil War.
There may be others back there, sir.
I know, but this is a deserted coast. It's marked as a swamp on the chart.
Well, I don't know, sir.
Sir, this is strange. It's very strange. Yes, it was strange. And stranger still was this vague uneasiness that I felt. As twilight fell, the aroma of the wild oranges was overwhelming. And suddenly, without knowing why, I slipped on my jacket and went to the side and dropped into the tender. Halbert stood by to cast off. He asked no questions, and I said nothing. What could I say? I didn't know myself why I was going. I pulled the tender up on the soft sand of the beach and walked up a dim path through the orange grove. Around the side of the house, where a smaller portico held off the weeds, a single doorway was framed in the pale light of the inner lamp. As I approached, I saw a shadow flit across it so swiftly, so furtively, that it was gone before I realized it had been a man. And then I saw her, sitting on the portico, rocking softly in her chair.
What do you want?
Oh, nothing. I came ashore. I thought no one was living here.
You're from the white boat that sailed in at sunset?
Yes, and I'm returning immediately.
It was like magic. Suddenly, without a sound, you were anchored in the bay.
Well, I've robbed you, too. I picked a couple of your oranges.
You won't like them. They've run wild. We can't sell them.
Well, they have a distinct flavor. I should be very glad to have some of them on the boat.
All you want.
Well, my man will get them and pay you.
Please don't. Nicholas attends to that. Won't you sit down? My father was here when you came up, but he went in. Strangers disturb him.
I should be getting back. I'm sorry to have disturbed you and your father.
No, it's nothing.
Well, good night, then.
Good night.
That was all, a fragment of commonplace conversation, but it was enough. Now the uneasiness I felt, the strangeness of this place, took shape for me. I saw it in her lovely, fragile face. I heard it in her voice. There'd been a hidden terror, a terrible, controlled fright that approached hysteria. But when I got back to the boat, Halvard made it even worse.
Find anything, sir?
There are people living there.
Well, there'll be water then. Maybe we can stay here for a couple of days.
What do you mean?
Well, this is good anchorage. I'd like to unship the propeller, and there's some scraping to do.
Yes, I suppose you're right. We need a couple of days of work before we head into the open sea.
Yes, sir.
Oh, we'll do it here. And so we stayed. In the light of morning, the strange dread I had felt seemed foolish, and especially when I went ashore and found the girl looking young and fresh and fragile. She was fishing off a little pier in the inner bay. She had a pathetic little rod and reel, and so I got our tackle from the boat and landed a big rockfish for her, enough for several dinners. We were carrying the fish to the house, and we came on a pale, thin ghost of a man. He's sitting on the portico. He started a swift retreat, but it was too late.
Father, wait. This is my father, Litchfield Stowe.
Oh, how do you do, sir?
Mary, you know I'm strangers.
Father, you know I wouldn't bring anyone to the house who would hurt us. And see, we're fetching you a splendid rockfish.
Yes. Just so. We are alone here. The man is away. My daughter and I. Fish. Inacceptable.
If you'll carry it in for me. Nicholas would do it, but he's away, and Father isn't strong. This way. We have no ice. I must put it in water. In here, right there. Thank you. You've been very nice. Now I suppose you'll go on across the world?
Well, not tonight. We're staying here making repairs.
Where do you come from? Where are you going?
Oh, from Cape Cod. I'm going to South America.
South America. I've traveled. On maps. I was born here in this house. I've never been 50 miles away.
You seem like a girl who's been everywhere. Everywhere in the world. You've had the best education, everything.
My father has many books in there, that's all.
You know, your eyes are remarkable. Magnetic. Well, there's something else in your eyes and in your voice. What is it? Fear?
Fear? Why, no, of course not. What should I be afraid of?
Well, I don't know, but I saw it in your father's face, too.
It's only your imagination.
Yes, no doubt. Well, goodbye, then, and thank you for the fishing. Strange how this girl would have upset me so. I tried to resist, but that evening I found myself going back to her. Tying the tender into the little pier, I watched her as she came to meet me.
I'm glad you came. Let's stay here by the seats. So lovely in the moonlight.
All right. Oh, it is nice here, isn't it?
Nicholas is back.
Nicholas?
He's our man. I lied to you today about fear. I suppose I am afraid. I suppose my father's passed some of his fear on to me.
Why is he afraid?
Well, that's a long story, going back to the First War. He was a young man then, and he didn't go to war. It wasn't that he was a coward, exactly. He just couldn't adjust to it mentally. People laughed at him and threatened him. And that's when sort of perpetual fear started. He ran away, met my mother and married, and they came here. None of us has ever left this lonely place. Never will, perhaps.
And your mother?
She's dead. Loneliness killed her. Perhaps it's no wonder that I sound timid and afraid. Perhaps I am.
Aren't you lonely, too?
I don't know anything else. But what about you? Who are you that you go sailing about the world with only a sailor for company?
No, I'm nobody. My name is John Woolfolk.
And you do nothing but sail about the world?
Nothing.
Why?
Oh, well, let's say that I don't like modern society. Let's say that I don't like entanglements.
I see.
Oh, no, no, I didn't mean that.
Oh, you mean apologize? I envy you your freedom. I sit here a great deal and watch the ships far out there on their water roads. You are enviable, sailing where you like, safe and free. Safe. Free.
There's something more than you've told me. There's more behind this fear in your voice.
No.
Well, look, perhaps I can help.
No,
if
no,
you...
please.
Oh. What's that?
It's Nicholas blowing on the conch. I've got to go in.
Wait a minute. I'll
no, no,
come
no,
with
please,
you.
No, don't come. You'll be going soon?
Tomorrow, perhaps.
Then, goodbye. Goodbye.
Now I knew the terror that I had only sensed was real. This girl was possessed by fear. This house held some terrible secret. What could it be? Next morning, Halford went in to fill a cask for water. He came back without the cask, and he was livid with rage.
There's an idiot in that house, sir. Next time I'll take the pistol.
What do you mean? Where's the cask?
It's broken, sir.
How? How did you...
I was filling it at the cistern, and this idiot, a huge hulking brute, came out of the house. He told me to get away. Well, I tried to explain we had permission, but he came at me with a knife, gibbering. He put his foot on the cask and crushed it.
Well, I'll see about this.
Be careful, sir. The man's not quite right. He's dangerous. Plenty dangerous.
I went ashore and around to the back door of the house. Millie wasn't in sight. When I knocked, a lumbering giant with pig-like eyes came to the door. Are you Nicholas?
What do you want?
Well, I take it you're the man who broke my water cask.
It was full of our water.
Look, I'm not going to argue with you. I came ashore to instruct you to keep your hands off of my property and my sailor.
And let our water be.
I told you that I wouldn't discuss the water. I don't have to justify myself to you. Just remember, keep your hands off.
Don't get me started.
What do you mean, started? I don't care what you
do. Don't get me started. Mind now, I warned you. Don't get me started.
Put down that knife.
Go away. Don't get me started now. Go away.
Stand back.
Don't get me started.
Nicholas, stop. What is this? What's the matter?
Well, nothing. Nicholas and I had a little misunderstanding, that's all.
You tell this man, Millie. Tell him to go. And don't get me started.
Nicholas, put down that knife! Now, Mr. Woolford, please. Please go!
I have never seen such terror in a woman's eyes. I felt completely helpless as I turned. I went on back to the boat. But mingled with her terror, I'd seen something else in Millie's eyes. There was a plea. And I knew there'd be another meeting between me and Nicholas. That night, a storm broke, a raging wind and rain to match my tortured mood. I hardly slept. Millie's face was always before my eyes, and by morning I knew that I must do something. I rode the tender in through a drizzling rain. I went up through the orange grove and stopped in some bushes by the house. Someone was coming out of the house, and so I crouched down out of sight. It was Millie. I rose, and I called to her. Millie!
Oh, it's you. I was just coming out to look. I was afraid you'd gone out. The sea's like a pack of wolves.
I won't go alone. Now, not without you, I won't.
What are you saying? That's madness.
No, I've got to talk to you. There's a lot that needs explaining. Things that I have a right to know.
No, not here. Come.
She led me into one of the smaller ruined buildings. We crouched far back in the dripping shadows of a corner.
No.
Millie, for the first time in 12 years, I'm living again. Darling, I'm in love with you.
I know nothing of love.
It's quickly learned. Millie, don't you feel anything for me at all?
I don't know. Perhaps if things were different someplace else, I might care very much.
But I'm going to take you away someplace else. I'm going to make things different. I'm going to give you a chance.
Oh, no, it's too late.
Why?
You came too late.
Why? Millie, what is this? What is this fear?
Nicholas.
Oh, that's foolish. He's nothing to be afraid of. Has he been bothering you?
He says he's crazy about me. He says I must marry him.
Where is he now?
Oh, no, John, you mustn't. Something frightful would happen, John.
Not frightful, just unfortunate for Nicholas.
But you don't understand. He's not human. There's something about him.
What about him?
He came here in April. We were glad to get him. Servants impossible to get back here in the wilderness. And he'd work for the smallest wages. Only a few days ago I found out why he was glad to be here. I was cleaning his room and I found this.
Let me see that. Wanted for murder, Isaac Nicholas. A homicidal maniac.
He knows I found it. He knows, and he's been furious. And then you came and he ran and hid in the pines. But he told me if I spoke about him, it would happen to me. And if I left with you, it would happen to Father. Now he thinks I'm in love with you. He told me to send you away. He said you must leave today.
Millie, I should have realized this.
I'm not to stay away for longer than now. I must go, John.
Look, Millie. It'll take us a couple of hours to get our boat ready. I'm going to come for you tonight at 8. Now, you tell him that you saw me and I promised to go. Act quietly. Say that you were upset, that you'll give him his answer tomorrow. Then at 8, you bring your father and walk out to the wharf. Now, that's all, but do it without hesitation or preparation.
Don't let him hurt us. Please don't.
Not now. He's finished. But do just as I say. It won't be long, hardly 3 hours. And then you're going to be free. Now that I knew, now that there was to be action, I felt better. Not that I minimized the risk. Halvard and I got the catch ready for sailing. At 8 o'clock, Halvard and I tied up to the little pier. The storm had let up a little, but it was still raining. I got up on the dock and I waited for Millie. 10 minutes passed. And then 20. Something was wrong. I told Halvard to wait there with the tender. Then I walked slowly up to the house. It was dark. I went up to the side portico to the heavy door. There was a tiny crack of light showing under it. I pushed it open. The light came from a parlor to the right. I looked in. On the floor lay a body, her father. He was dead. He was crushed. His arm twisted grotesquely under him. There wasn't a sound in the house. Slowly I walked through the downstairs rooms. Nothing. Then, back in the hall, I heard a slight creak. Upstairs, someone had moved. Was it Millie, alive? Or was it Nicholas lying in wait? I groped slowly up the stairs. I didn't dare to use my flashlight. It would have made me a target for his knife. The upstairs hall was pitch black. Still, there was no sound. I inched my way along the wall, slowly. And then... stumbled on a loose board. The pistol flew out of my hand, but the stumble saved my life. At the same instant, I felt Nicholas lunge, heard the knife sing past my ear and thud into the wall. I felt his great bulk smashing on my shoulders. My gun was somewhere on that dark floor. His knife was embedded in the wall. Now we were grappling hand to hand, rolling on the floor, kicking, tearing, gouging, crushing. My strength and wit against the massive bulk of a maniacal killer. How many minutes did that unusual and unequal struggle last? I don't know. It seemed an hour. Several times, as if by common consent, we rested for a minute at a time. Once we rolled apart and lay panting, the breath aching in my throat. And then I heard him groping along the wall, searching for the knife or gun. I threw myself at him again. He was too big. He was too furious. I felt my strength ebbing away. His fingers were closing over my throat. With one last effort, I tried to throw him off, to roll him over. I staggered to my feet. I was dazed. I looked up. We had fallen through the banister down the stairwell. Nicholas had landed on the bottom. He lay there on the stairs, sprawled, his head at a grotesque angle. He wasn't dead. He's only stunned. I leaned against the wall, looking at him stupidly. There was something that I must remember. What was it? Then she came down the steps, and I remembered. Millie.
I had to walk right past him. There was no other way. Right past his head and my skirt was... I think we better go away.
Millie, yes, we'll leave at once.
I must tell you about my father. You know, in Virginia, the women tied an apron on the door because he wouldn't go to war. And that preyed on his mind. And he was afraid of the slightest
yes,
thing.
Yes, I know, but we must
things
go.
Things upset him so he had no strength.
To hear her talk like this, like a sick child, was almost more than I could bear. Then I heard something. Nicholas had got up. He stood up and stared at us for a moment, and then he started slowly up the stairs. He was going after that knife.
The least little thing upset him.
Millie, look, we've got to go.
Well, I was to meet a man. We were going away someplace where it would be peaceful. But Nicholas suspected, you see. He asked why Father had put on his heavy winter clothes. And then when I tried to go out, he pushed
Millie,
me.
Millie,
and do you know what Father did then? He came up and said, "Don't do that. Take your hands off my daughter." His lips shook a little. But he said it. That's the important thing.
Yes, of course. Your father was a brave man after all. But please, now, come. You were supposed to meet a man. That man's waiting for you. There's no time to lose.
Father said, "Take your hands off my daughter." Nicholas killed him, of course. But it was a brave thing to do.
Yes, now, come. I couldn't wait any longer. I could hear Nicholas coming back. I picked her up and carried her out into the night, down the path to the pier. Behind me, I could hear Nicholas crashing through the brush like a giant animal in pursuit.
Are you all right, sir?
Yes. I'm about done in, but I'm all right. Here, help me. Help me get her into the boat.
Yes, sir. There. Oh, there's someone coming,
yes,
sir.
It's Nicholas. He's got a knife.
Good. I wanted to get back at him. You get in, sir. I'll take care of him.
All right, Albert. I wouldn't be much help anyway. Albert went to intercept Nicholas on the path. I heard them meet and struggle for a moment. And then a figure came walking slowly, stooped onto the pier. I got ready to shove the boat out into the water, and then...
It's all right, sir. It's me.
Albert, where's Nicholas?
I stopped him. He was all bumped out.
Are you hurt?
No, it's just a scratch, sir. I missed his hand at first in the dark. It's nothing.
Good. Well, let's get away from here, then. I I held Millie in my arms as Halvard rode to the catch. Erratically, I suppose because of the storm. Be ready to cast off in 2 minutes. The last obstacle would be the narrow passage out of the cove. In this storm, it would be very dangerous. I started to take Millie into the cabin.
No! There's Nicholas in the doorway.
Oh, nonsense. Nicholas is dead. You're on my boat. You're safe, Millie.
Safe? With John Wolfer?
I am John Wolfer.
But you didn't come.
Yes, I came, Millie. You're safe. Please, come.
I'd rather stay up here.
All right. You sit here beside Halvard. I'm going up front to take soundings.
In this wind, you won't be able to hear me if I call,
No,
sir.
But you can hear me. Remember, we only have 3 foot clearance. Now, you'll have to hold it steady through that passage.
Yes, sir.
Halvard, now, this is no time to be brave. How do you feel?
I feel all right, sir. I've taken knives before.
All right.
Just a scratch.
All right, fine. Now, we'll fix it just as soon as we get outside. All right, now, let's go. Pull up your anchor and turn over the engine.
Yes, sir.
The boat headed into the tearing wind of the storm straight toward the narrow inlet. A foot too far on either side and we'd hit. In this sea, that would mean death for all of us. I stood far up on the bow, taking soundings, feeling out the passage. Howling wind carried the call back to Halvard.
Forward!
Now the boat veered again. I realized that he must have lost an awful lot of blood.
Halvard! Halvard! Steadier!
Slowly, haltingly, it came around.
3 1/2! Steady now!
But it was anything but steady. The boat wavered and swung as if an inexperienced hand was at the wheel. In a moment, we might hit.
3 1/4!
We were in the passage.
Hold steady, Halvard! Steady!
3 1/2, we're through.
Goodbye, Halvard! Goodbye!
Good boy, Halvard, I called. But when I went back, it wasn't Halvard at the wheel. It was Millie. Millie, her hands steady, her eyes washed clear of any madness. Millie with a little tight smile on her face, but no fear. And Halvard lay rolling with the swells in the bottom of the cockpit.
I'm afraid, John. He was wounded worse than you thought.
Oh, Halvard, good heavens.
He told me to take the wheel. Said it was life or death, and then he slid down like
when?
That.
When was this?
Back there in the passage. Just when you said 3 1/2. I'm afraid I wasn't very good, but I held on.
Oh, Millie, you were wonderful.
No, not yet. But I'll learn, John. I'll learn.
Escape was produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes, with Van Heflin starring as John Wolfolk. Tonight we have presented Wild Oranges by Joseph Hergesheimer, adapted for radio by John Dunkel. Featured in the cast were Betty Lou Gerson, Bill Conrad, Edmund MacDonald, Wilms Herbert. Special music was conceived and conducted by Del Castillo. Good night, then, until next week, when once again we offer you Escape.
Overall, Escape did a pretty good job of convincing the story for radio. And you know, that's always a problem whenever one of these programs took a longer and more complex story and brought it down to 30 minutes with commercials. The tension of the novella is lost by the way in which the two main characters just pretty much fall in love instantly. That's really my only criticism of it, is they just sort of fall into each other's arms. And doesn't seem particularly realistic. Next up, we're going to have a short visit from Mr. Arch Obler and his program Lights Out. This particular episode, The Fast One, is from October the 14th of 1936. But first we're going to have a little bit of a break. Here it comes.
Obelers, lights out, everybody. We bring you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly so that if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now. Who among us, and you're included, has not had the dream at one time or another of being superior to his or her fellow beings? To jump higher, to run faster, to dance better, to be more beautiful? We've all run the gamut, all of us, at various ages, of standing out from the crowd of humanity. That's what our story is about today, being different in a very special manner. And now, if you haven't already done so, turn off your lights now.
But my dear Mr. Finn, $5,000.
$5,000. $5,000. What do you think you're doing, bidding at an auction sale?
I am bidding for your services. And if a $5,000 retainer isn't enough, why name your own price? I'm not here as an individual. I'm the representative of a group of casualty insurance companies who handle practically all of the burglary insurance in this entire area.
Well, if you're that important, talk important money. $10,000 cash.
Very well. I'll write you a check.
Fenn Detective Agency. F-E-N-N.
Yes.
$500,000 stolen in broad daylight, no witnesses. A very clever criminal, whoever he is.
But surely you don't believe only one man has committed all these crimes?
Whenever there is greatness, even in crime, the answer is a man. One man.
25 places robbed both sides of State Street, 25 stores robbed in the space of 30 minutes, and you talk of one man?
He's very clever.
No one man could rob 25 places, spreading over a distance of 3 blocks in the space of 30 minutes.
No?
Of course not. Banks and department stores and loan companies. Cash registers cleaned out. And not a clue, not a witness. The devil alone knows what this is all about.
The devil alone.
City morgue. Oh, hello, Chief. Yeah, he's been here 2 days in a row. Yeah, all he looks at is the bodies of the hit and run. Listen, Chief, here he comes now. Yeah. Okay, I'll try to find out. Yeah. Hiya, Mr. Finn. Early today, ain't you?
Quickly, show me the new ones.
Yeah, sure. Why not? The same kind?
Yes.
Okay. This one's name is, it's on the tag here, Morrison something. Relatives ain't claimed him yet. Look at him. Smashed up pretty, ain't he?
He never knew what struck him.
I'll say he didn't. The way that skull... Well, I bet you he went out just like that.
I'm no longer interested in this one. Where's the next?
Coming up. Wait till I put this fella back on ice. Let me see. Where'd I put the dame? Oh, yeah, here she is. Kid. Whoever the rat was, his hair must have bust the front end of his crate. Look at her. Ain't much of her left to tell who she was, is there? Only identification on her was her first name in a book. Let me see, Libby. Yeah, that's what it was, Libby. Gosh, if this was my girlfriend and any hit-and-run rat did this, I'd find him even if I... Hey, Mr. Finn, what's the matter? What are you laughing about? It ain't funny. The girl's face, it smashed her. What are you laughing about?
I know. Now I know.
Hold on there. I want to talk to you.
Are you talking to me, copper?
Oh, wise guy, huh? Listen, you, what's the idea of cross-examining everybody in this neighborhood?
Now, just a minute before you start using that nightstick, you better have a look at this.
Why, you're a private detective.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, no, how was I supposed to know that...
Well, you know it now. Tell me this. What do you know about the hit-and-run cases in this district?
Oh, that's bad, sir. But what can I do? Drunken rats driving without lights and giving no warning. We'll get him tonight, sir. Believe me, we will.
What do you mean?
There's going to be 10 squad cars touring this district.
Just a moment. One question. Have you been hearing any peculiar noises on your beat? Noises like an airplane motor when there wasn't anything in the sky?
Go on now. You're kidding me. Say, look at the time. I better get moving on me beat or the sergeant will be shooting his mouth up. Anything else I can tell you?
Yes. This restaurant we're in front of. Is it a good place to eat?
Yeah. Bill Lewis's place is okay. He's off in Washington, but his wife's running it. Nothing like the Ritz, but it's okay. Well, I'll be seeing you.
You're mistaken.
What'll you have, sir? Nice dinner?
Coffee.
Piece of nice fresh pie. Apple, peach, cherry.
Apple.
Yes, sir, right away.
I beg your pardon.
Oh. Where did you come from?
I followed you in. I wish to speak with you.
I don't want to buy anything.
I am not selling. Just like you, I am asking questions.
Eh?
I have been watching you. All afternoon, you have been asking many questions.
What's that here?
I am a Bellini, Dr. Bellini. I live in this neighborhood. I am interested in whatever goes on in it.
Ah, glad to meet you, Doctor. Maybe you can tell me. Have you heard any unusual noises during the late afternoon and evening hours? Noise you couldn't quite locate or explain?
Noises? What noises? You are a detective.
Why do you ask that?
As a physician, I pride myself on my powers of observation. You are a detective, eh, my friend?
Yes.
Then come with me. Do not raise your voice now. This gun in my pocket will kill you. Walk slowly toward the door. Make no noise. Now, open the door and step outside. I advise discretion. I will be close behind you. Now, walk beside me down the street. A gun in your side and your lap. Why do you laugh? Tell me.
I've been looking for you, Dr. Bellini.
Yeah? Why?
I must know your secret. I must.
Very well. But there is a price to pay.
Price?
What is your price? Death. So, now we will not be disturbed, Mr.
Fenn. Mark Fenn.
Mark Fenn. The man who is willing to die to learn my secret.
I'll take my chances. Just tell me, how did you do it?
But first I will ask you questions. You are either a very clever man, Mr. Fenn, or a very lucky one. How did you suspect it was only one man?
I knew. It had to be one man.
But how did you correlate the missing money and the dead in the streets?
30 minutes to collect $500,000 and cover 25 stores. I knew you'd have to move fast. I figured someone would get hurt.
You are very clever.
You did do it, didn't you?
Come, I will show you. You will be the first to know. And the last. Here. Sit here.
Yes, yes.
Now, what do you see in my hand, Mark Fenn?
A bottle. It's full of oil.
Not oil, you blind fool. Power. The key to the world. Listen to me, Mark Fenn. One drop of this in the world is mine. You believe, Mark Twain? You believe what I tell you?
But what does that stuff do? You've got to tell me.
Speed. That's what it gives. Speed. Faster, faster, faster. Every atom in me, faster. You do believe, my friend. You've got to believe.
But what? I don't understand it. What does that stuff do to you?
Oh, you fool. Why don't you listen?
But
speed. That's what it gives me. Speed. Every physical process, every mental activity, it speeds them up 10, 20 times the normal rate. Faster, faster. Every molecule. Listen. The average man walks 3 miles an hour. One drop of this, and I walk 60 miles an hour. Now you know my secret. A chemical which speeds up my activities until I am a god among men. A drop of this, one drop, and I walk and I run and I talk and I think 20 times faster than any other man in the world.
Oh, no, that can't be.
No?
Then watch. I drink. Doctor Bellini. Where are you, Doctor? Where are you? Bellini. Bellini, what are you talking about? What are you saying? I don't understand. Stop it.
Bellini. You went away. Where? What happened to you? Why do you talk like that?
I told you all physical, mental processes speed up. Wait a second. Chemical effect will wear off completely.
That stuff, it makes you talk fast, is that it?
There. Effect is worn off. I'm back to normal rate again.
Where did you go? Where?
To prove to you that what I say is true. Look what I have in my hand.
Diamonds. Diamond necklace. Where did you...
From the window of that jewelry store 3 blocks away.
You were there and back in these few seconds?
20 times faster than any man can run, I ran in those few seconds. 20 times faster than any man can think, I thought in those few seconds. Now, do you believe, Mark?
It was you moving at 100 miles an hour that knocked down those people and killed them. It was you moving so fast, they were not hurt. Though they were hurt, but not you.
Yes, it was I.
It was you moving so fast they couldn't see you who took that $500,000 in cash from those stores.
Yes, I.
Me too.
You?
Yes, me. All my life I wanted. Bellini, the power you've got now, Bellini, I want it too.
But why? Why should I share it with you?
Because I can help you. Yes, that's it. I can help you. There's so much to do. You can rule the world, but you cannot conquer it alone. You'll need help, and I'll need help. You hear me, Bellini? I'll help you. I'll do anything you say, but you must let me join you. With the dream of all my life coming true. Power like God. Let me join you, Bellini. Let me.
Yes. I need a man like you. Together we will help the world.
Which is sweeping our city is due entirely to the unholy alliance of crime and politics. Sweep the culprits out of office. And I tell you that our
police will be able to support. I tell you, Mr. Mayor, I'm doing everything I can do. I've sworn in 1,000 extra deputies. I've got the force with the troops.
And I tell you, fellow citizens, this alliance of the underworld and their masters can never be broken until we, the people, take matters into our own hands. Like the vigilantes of old, we must rise in our wrath and drive these vampires out of our fair city. Merry Christmas! Arise!
Destroy these vampires!
A revolution is plot.
Unholy alliance of crime and politics!
$10 million. Nobody in the world ever collected money that fast.
It was good letting you join me.
I told you.
All the places where money is, you know.
But it's not money alone we want, Bellini.
Oh, I know, I know. We have been just, how do you say it, testing our wing.
And now we're ready to go.
Yes. New concentrate of my chemical is ready. Today we have taken the city, tomorrow the world.
The world.
But now, while the city we have left behind us boils in the madness we have brought to it, you and I, we will rest, eh, friend?
You'll laugh again.
Why?
I was thinking of the fun I had this morning.
Oh, you mean when we liquidated your enemies?
Dead. Every mother's son of them. Everyone that ever laughed at
them. Yes, dead, every one of them. And you go on to new triumphs.
They never knew what hit them. That's the only trouble with moving so fast, Bellini.
You mean when you struck them at 50 times the normal rate?
Yes, it was like hitting them with a 6-inch shell. Their skulls smashed in like empty eggs.
And you are disappointed because your revenge was over too quickly, eh, Mark Fan?
Yes.
What if I were to tell you that my new concentrate, the one we will use tomorrow when we arrive at the seat of your government in Washington, what if I were to tell you that this new concentrate is infinitely more powerful than the one we have been using?
More powerful? Well, how can that be?
Listen, the one we have been using increases the physical and mental rate 20 times, is that not so?
Yes, talk, walk, run, and think 50 times faster.
So there you have it. With the new concentrate, talk, walk, think, and run an infinite number of times faster than normal.
You mean there's no limit?
No limit.
We'll move faster?
As fast as we're light.
Say.
200, 300, 500, the limit will be our desire. A blur of light, here, there, the next place, masters of men. Because compared to us, men are snails who crawl while we run.
Masters of men.
Look, I brought the bottle. The new concentrate.
Looks the same.
Yes. Shall we try some, Mark, then?
I don't know.
We must try it sometime.
Yes.
It is the same basic formula as the other.
Sure.
I do not ask you to do what I will not do myself. We will take equal amounts and compare reactions.
How much, Bellini?
Two drops each. I have two medicine droppers ready.
Yes.
The moment we swallow the drops, we will move toward the... You see that barn across the field?
Yes.
We meet there and see how fast we can move. Here are your drops, Mark, then.
I...
Surely you're not afraid, my friend.
Afraid? Me? Well, no, of course not. Give me those drops.
Hmm. We'd bring together.
Yes.
Mark Fenn.
What?
Mark Fenn.
Bellini. Why? What happened?
I am not quite sure.
The barn. We're lying by the barn.
We did get here. Mark Fenn, your clothes.
My clothes? Well, I'm naked.
I too. Mark Fenn, listen. We moved so quickly through the air... Our clothes were torn off.
Yes.
The new concentrate, infinitely more powerful. We moved through the air at a tremendous rate, hundreds of miles.
Lenny.
What?
Your lips, they're not moving, and yet I hear you.
Your lips, they do not move either, and yet I hear you, too. That cannot be.
What is it, Bellini?
Our reactions. The concentrate has speeded them up so intensely, we read each other's thoughts. No, no, do not move.
Why not?
The concentrate, it was too powerful. We must lie quietly until its effects wear off.
Yes, but... Bellini...
Fan... Why are you looking at me like that?
Your face.
My face?
Something's happening to it.
What? Speak up. What is wrong with my face? What? Yours.
What?
Your face. Creases in it. Lines.
And yours. That's what's happening to yours. Bellini. Ashfield. Bellini. What's happening? Tell me.
Age. That is it. Age.
Age?
Age.
What?
We are aging. We are aging.
Aging? What are you talking about?
Concentrate. Our physical reactions, they have been speeded up too much.
Tell me. What's that got to do with...
Listen to me. The concentrate, it has speeded up our life processes to infinity. Every second is aging us a year. Every second.
No. No, I'm a young man, Melanie. You're lying. I'm not getting older. I'm not. I'm not...
We are dying, my friend. Dying, dying.
No, you lie, Bellini. I won't die. I won't die.
Dead. And yet the solution works on in his flesh. Decay. No, 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 I cannot die. Master of men, I cannot die. Master of... death.
In 1798, Sultan Selim III of Turkey, in the presence of British Ambassador Sir Robert Ainslie, shot an arrow the incredible distance of 2,916 feet. Lucy Page of Tamworth, New Hampshire, certainly exploded the theory that women are the weaker sex. In addition to doing all of her regular housework, she cared for two cows, made all the clothing for her family, spun 200 skeins of wool yarn and 45 skeins of linen yarn, wove 90 yards of carpeting, made 69 yards of flannel and 21 yards of toweling. And she did all of this at the age of 73, believe it or not.
Okay, what we have next is from the LibriVox Project. It's a short story by one of my favorite science fiction writers out of the 1950s, Frederick Brown. It's called... I don't need to say what it's called. And then we'll go into our next break, which will be followed by the CBC's Vanishing Points presentation of a short story by J.G. Ballard, Escapement, from 1988.
Earthmen Bearing Gifts. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Alan Winteroud. Earthmen Bearing Gifts by Frederick Brown. Dar-Ri sat alone in his room meditating. From outside the door, he caught a thought wave equivalent to a knock, and glancing at the door, he willed it to slide open. It opened. "Enter, my friend," he said. He could have projected the idea telepathically, but with only two persons present, speech was more polite. Ejon Key entered. "You are up late tonight, my leader," he said. "Yes, Key. Within an hour the Earth rocket is due to land, and I wish to see it." "Yes, I know. It will land 1,000 miles away, if their calculations are correct, beyond the horizon. But if it lands even twice that far, the flash of the atomic explosion should be visible. And I have waited long for first contact. For even though no Earthman will be on that rocket, it will still be first contact for them. Of course, our telepath teams have been reading their thoughts for many centuries, but this will be the first physical contact between Mars and Earth." Key made himself comfortable on one of the low chairs. "True," he said. "I have not followed recent reports too closely, though. Why are they using an atomic warhead? I know they suppose our planet is uninhabited, but still..." "They will watch the flash through their lunar telescopes and get a... what do they call it? A spectroscopic analysis? That will tell them more than they know now, or think they know, much of it is erroneous, about the atmosphere of our planet and the composition of its surface. It is... call it a sighting shot, Key. They'll be here in person within a few oppositions, and then..." Mars was holding out, waiting for Earth to come. What was left of Mars, that is. This one small city of about 900 beings. The civilization of Mars was older than that of Earth, but it was a dying one. This was what remained of it. One city, 900 people. They were waiting for Earth to make contact, for a selfish reason and for an unselfish one. Martian civilization had developed in a quite different direction from that of Earth. It had developed no important knowledge of the physical sciences, no technology. But it had developed social sciences to the point where there had not been a single crime, let alone a war, on Mars for 50,000 years. And it had developed fully the parapsychological sciences of the mind, which Earth was just beginning to discover. Mars could teach Earth much. How to avoid crime and war to begin with. Beyond those simple things lay telepathy, telekinesis, empathy. And Earth would, Mars hoped, teach them something even more valuable to Mars. How, by science and technology, which it was too late for Mars to develop now, even if they had the type of minds which would enable them to develop these things, to restore and rehabilitate a dying planet, so that an otherwise dying race might live and multiply again. Each planet would gain greatly, and neither would lose. And tonight was the night when Earth would make its first sighting shot. Its next shot, a rocket containing Earthmen, or at least an Earthman, would be at the next opposition, 2 Earth years, or roughly 4 Martian years, hence. The Martians knew this because their teams of telepaths were able to catch at least some of the thoughts of Earthmen, enough to know their plans. Unfortunately, at that distance, the connection was one way. Mars could not ask Earth to hurry its program, or tell Earth scientists the facts about Mars' composition and atmosphere, which would have made this preliminary shot unnecessary. Tonight, Re, the leader, as nearly as the Martian word can be translated, and Key, his administrative assistant and closest friend, sat and meditated together until the time was near. Then they drank a toast to the future, in a beverage based on menthol, which had the same effect on Martians as alcohol on Earthmen, and climbed to the roof of the building in which they had been sitting. They watched towards the north where the rocket should land. The stars shone brilliantly and unwinkingly through the atmosphere. In Observatory Number 1, on Earth's moon, Raj Everett, his eye at the eyepiece of the spotter scope, said triumphantly, "Thar she blew, Willie. And now, as soon as the films are developed, we'll know the score on that old planet Mars." He straightened up. There'd be no more to see now, and he and Willie Sanger shook hands solemnly. It was an historical occasion. "Hope it didn't kill anybody. Any Martians, that is. Raj, did it hit dead center in Syrtis Major?" "Near as matters. I'd say it was maybe 1,000 miles off to the south, and that's damn close on a 50-million-mile shot. Willie, do you really think there are any Martians?" Willie thought a second and then said, no, he was right.
Stories of J.G. Ballard. Tonight, Escapement.
How did you get in?
Don't you remember? I still have a key.
Neither of us was watching the television too closely when I first noticed the slip. Helen was busy hemming an old dress, while I was stretched out in front of the fireplace with the crossword, raising gently and toying with 17 doves.
Told by antique clocks. Two words, five letters each.
What about your wife? She knows about us?
They got their reels crossed. This is where we came in.
Is it? I wasn't really watching. Tap the set.
I'm sure that will help. You watch. Any moment, the station manager will come on to apologize for the mix-up. Somewhere there's an engineer out of a job.
I don't think we've seen this.
You said yourself you weren't paying attention.
Shh, quiet. Now that I'm watching, I don't want to miss you.
Fine, suit yourself. I've got plenty to do with my crossword. Let's see. Told by empty.
Just look for the richest dude in the state. Figured you'd be shacked up with him.
Sorry.
Don't. 10 minutes later, it happened again.
He owns. How did you get in?
Don't you remember? I still have a key.
Take a lot for granted.
Told by antique clocks. Two words, five letters.
What way is that?
Like you can never get enough.
It's funny. Haven't they spotted it yet? They can't all be asleep.
Stay away.
Station, the bloody network.
Something wrong with the set.
I thought you were watching this junk.
I am.
Then perhaps you'd care to explain to me why they're playing it through for the third time.
Simple. They're not. You must have read the book.
Heaven forbid. Do you mind if I just change the program? See if anything else is on.
Oh, this is the most interesting part.
Maybe the first time. It's beginning to wear a little thin. I'll come back to it in a minute, I promise.
That's what you always say.
True, but this time I mean it. Promise?
All right.
Thank you, dear.
Oh, and it's a long ball down the left side. Collected by Smithick. He's around Beardsley. Oh, a lovely left-footed cross. Bass is in the air. The end's it. Oh, it's a goal! It's a goal! Manchester United!
I refuse to spend my evening watching football.
Yes, darling.
Correctly answering our jackpot question, Ruthie, you have won yourself a brand new 1988 Ferrari. And here's the key.
Wouldn't mind winning one of those myself.
Harry, don't be mean.
Sorry.
Come in.
Hello, Jake.
What do you want?
Watch it, Helen. Put the saying away. It's getting on my nerves. God, I know this off by heart.
Shh, can't you stop talking?
Sure. What if I smoke?
Harry.
Well, I can too.
You may not believe this, darling, but I'm here on a mission.
That's better.
Yeah.
I sat back, waiting for the inevitable network apology. The scene grew to a close, just as it did the last time and the time before that, and...
I still have a key.
Fantastic. It's incredible.
I didn't know you cared for this show. You never used to.
Darling, in case you haven't noticed, they are now playing the same scene through for the fourth time.
The fourth time? Are they repeating it?
Oh. I begin to think there's a studio full of technicians all slumped over their controls while some automatic camera pumps out the same reel ad nauseum.
What about your wife? She know better?
Possible explanation?
Doesn't matter.
Network suicide pact.
What about your...
Harry, but unlikely.
Will you sit down and stop fidgeting? Honestly, Harry, sometimes you're worse than a little boy.
You haven't by any chance seen my cigarette, Harry. It was here a minute ago.
I've warned you about careless smoking, Harry.
Yes, I know you have, dear. I'm very sorry, but I'm sure I wasn't being careless. I must have thrown it in the fireplace.
Many of our favorite dishes have taken their names from famous historical figures. Fill in the blanks with the correct name. Oysters, blank.
Rockefeller.
Yes, that's 50 points to Ruthie.
I thought you were enjoying the show. Why'd you turn?
Dear, I don't know about you, but I can only watch it so many times.
Oh.
Look, it's 9:05 now. I'll turn back at 9:15, I promise. Maybe then I can get an explanation.
All right, but remember, 9:15.
Etched in stone, dear.
Ruthie, the perpetual quiz show contestant, was working her way up a pyramid of questions on cuisine.
Blank.
Kiev.
Marsalis. Wrong.
Tetrazzini.
Yes.
Needless to say, Ruthie fared much better than I. Eventually, she answered the jackpot question, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Answering our jackpot question, Ruthie, you have won yourself a brand new 1988 Ferrari, and here's the...
Another one? She'll need a garage the size of a football field to hold all of her bloody Ferraris. Speaking of football...
Been said already. What a goal he's just scored to put his mates in front. Now, let's have a look at the replay, shall we? He's around Beardsley. Oh, a lovely left-footed cross. Bass is in the air. He heads it. Oh, it's a goal! It's a goal! Manchester United!
Incredible! Helen, get me a scotch and soda.
What's the matter? Have you strained your back again?
Quickly.
Hold on.
Hello, Jake.
What do you want?
Can't an ex-wife visit an ex-husband without bad feelings mucking things up?
It's too fantastic.
Are you offer me a drink?
All three programs are repeating.
Sure.
What are the chances of that ever happening again?
What
should I do? What can you do? Sit back. Wait. What's the time? 9:14. All right. Keep your eyes glued to the screen.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss the next change.
You and Dracula. Look.
Here you go, love. One scotch and soda on the rocks. I'll just set it next to you here on the end table.
Fine.
Are you all right?
I still was fine, didn't I? Really, I'm all right. What's your show?
Did you get in?
Don't you remember? I still have a key.
Take a lot for granted.
Antique clocks.
Seen the way you look at me.
Wind chimes?
What way is that?
No.
Like you can never
get... Aztec something or other, maybe?
I need
you. Time for that drink.
How could I stay away, baby?
Well?
Well, what?
Where did you put it?
Put what, dear?
The scotch. You brought it in a couple of minutes ago. It was right here on the table.
You've been dreaming.
Well, in that case, I'd better go dream up another drink. Or a drink, for that matter.
Don't be long. You'll miss the show.
Somehow, I doubt that. That's odd. The clock over the kitchen sink says 9:07. That has to be at least an hour slow. What's your watch say? 9:05? And it always runs perfectly. What's going on here? Steady. No sense panicking until the situation calls for it. I know. Call your partner, Tom Farnold. Maybe he knows something.
Right.
Be home. Be home.
Hello?
Tom.
That's my name.
Harry here. Tom, what time do you make it?
Time the Liberals were back.
Seriously, our clocks are going crazy here.
Well, let's see. The big hands on the... 10 past, I make it.
I see.
10 past what exactly?
9 should be. By the way, did you get those pickles I left for you in the safe?
Yes, I did, Tom, thanks.
It's an old family recipe.
Imagine it. Listen, Tom, the damnedest things are happening here. We were watching Helen's soap on 2.
Yeah, I'm watching it now. Can you hurry this up?
You're watching it. Then how do you explain this repetition business and the way the clocks are all stuck between 9 and 9:15?
I don't know, Harry. Maybe you should go outside and give the house a good shake. Harry?
Yes, Tom?
You feeling all right?
To tell you the truth, Tom, I'm a little concerned about my mental health. I think I might be losing my hair.
Careful. Losing what? Harry?
My hair, Tom.
You called me at home because you're worried about losing your hair? Hell, you've got a bit of the reseeds, but... I think you're overreacting.
I agree, Tom. And thanks.
For what?
The pickles. If ever I needed a drink, this is the one.
I reached for my glass and...
Did you get in?
Don't you remember? Ask my key.
17 down, told by antique. Now where the hell is it?
Where's what, dear?
My scotch. What the hell do I have to do to get a drink around here?
Would you like me to fix you a drink, darling?
Don't bother. You could fix them all night and I'd never get to drink one. Excuse me.
Hello?
Yeah, Tom, did I just call you a few minutes ago?
What? Who is this?
It's me, Harry. Harry Bartley.
Oh.
Sorry about that mix-up, Tom. What I meant was, did... you call me a few minutes ago. We've been having a little trouble with the line here.
Wasn't me, Harry. By the way, did you get those pickles I left for you in the safe?
Help! Help! Why, yes, I did, Tom.
It's an old family recipe.
Will you shut up about your bloody pickles? Tom?
Now get a grip, Harry. You're beginning to act like a lunatic.
I begin to feel like a lunatic.
Harry, who are you talking to?
No one, dear.
What are you going to tell Helen?
The truth. But first... Right.
Nobody owns me.
Yeah? Then leave him. Your husband know what you used to do for a living napkin off?
No.
Or you suppose he'd do if he did?
You wouldn't tell him.
Harry, I was watching that.
Do you suppose you could forget the TV for 2 minutes of your life and listen to me? This is very important.
All right, Harry, I'm listening.
Well, it's rather difficult to explain, dear, but for some reason, Helen, I don't know why, we seem to be in a sort of a circular time trap, just going round and round. You're not aware of it, and I can't find anyone else who is either.
How many of those have you had?
I have not been drinking, Helen, despite considerable efforts to the contrary. For the last 2 hours, a section of time about 15 minutes long has been repeating itself. The clocks are stuck between 9 and 9:15. That show you've been watching...
Oh, my show! Harry, you're just being silly. Now turn it on again.
Oh, I give up.
Come here.
Hello, Jake.
What do you want?
Can next wife visit next husband with their bad feelings, muck and things up?
Oh, and it's a long ball down the left side. Collected by Smithick. He's around Oh, oysters, blank.
Rockefeller.
Yes, that's 50 points to Ruthie. Next.
Of the best-selling cosmological study, Black Holes, the Universe, and all that stuff. Good evening, Professor.
I haven't seen this before.
Professor,
Harry, my show.
How these eruptions of gas on the sun's surface will affect the Earth?
Well, I don't think there's any cause for alarm. These eruptions or billows have mass. So I think we can expect a lot of strange optical effects as the light leaving the sun is deflected by them gravitationally.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the relationship between light and time, Professor? If I remember my relativity, they're tied together pretty closely. Mm. Are you sure we won't all need to add another hand to our clocks and watches?
I think we'd be able to get along quite nicely without upsetting the Swiss. The time is extremely complicated.
But I assure you the clocks won't suddenly start running backwards or sideways.
That fool doesn't know what he's talking about.
Harry.
Sorry?
He really took me to the cleaners.
Oh, you're not still bitter.
I hope I didn't miss much.
Frankly, dear, I don't see how you could.
What do you think?
I think you're still in love with me.
I got over you a long time ago. I realize
that
you...
According to my watch, I estimate another 20 seconds until the next change. Might as well make yourself comfortable.
Harry, you're not watching this. How would you like to make your dear wife a drink?
Ordinarily, I would, dear. But I don't much care for the idea of my being flung from the kitchen back onto the sofa, however painless it might be.
What?
3, 2, 1.
You know where to find me.
The jump there was smoother than expected. Not the slightest tremor. The phrase was stuck in my mind. Olden times. Olden times. 17 down, told by antique clocks. 5 and 5. That's it. Olden times. Must have solved it subconsciously.
Pardon, dear?
Just mumbling as usual. Excuse me. Tom, it's me again. I wanted to apologize for my behavior earlier. I was completely out of line.
Is that you, Harry? Did you get those pickles I left for you in the safe? I say something funny?
No, Tom. And yes, I got the pickles. An old family recipe, right?
How did you know?
Deja vu. Look, Tom, I hate to ask you on such short notice, but can you come over right away?
Yes, certainly. What's up?
I'll tell you when you get here.
It's not Helen, is it?
Who?
Helen. Your wife?
Oh, no, she's fine. As soon as you can.
Right. On my way.
And now?
Who is that on the phone, dear?
Tom. He's coming over.
That's nice.
Damn. I just realized. It's at least half an hour's drive from his place. Yeah. I'll never make it. The very most he'd get halfway here before...
Before what, Harry?
Before the show's over, dear. Tom's a great fan of it.
You could always watch one of the other channels.
Of course, that's it. Why didn't I think of it before? Excuse me. Channel 3. Oh, here we are.
Channel 3, may I help you?
Yes, I'd like to speak with the producers of Jackpot Trivia, please.
I'm sorry, sir, but that show is on the air.
I'm well aware of that, but this call is extremely important. It concerns this evening's program.
If you just call back in the
Let morning. Me put it this way. If you don't put me through this instant, I shall douse myself with petrol in your lobby and strike a match.
I'll put your call through.
Thought you might.
Hello.
Sorry, this may seem odd to you, but... Is the jackpot question in tonight's program known to any members of the studio audience?
No, of course not.
I see. Do you know it by any chance?
No, I do not. All the questions for tonight's show are known only to our senior program producer and Monsieur Philippe Sisson of Savoy Hotels Limited. They're a closely guarded secret.
Good. Now, if you've got a piece of paper handy, I'll give you the jackpot question. Ready? List the complete menu at the Guildhall Coronation Banquet in July 1953.
Just a minute.
Certainly. Come on, how long does it take?
Just a moment. Who is this?
Oh, thank God. My name is Harold Bartley, and I live at 129B Sutton Court Road, Northwest 3.
Oh, sorry.
The jump back caught me completely unaware. Instead of being stretched out on the sofa as usual, I was leaning against the mantelpiece and staring down at my crossword. Huh? Helen.
Dear?
Did you fill in 17 down?
No, I never so much as looked at the crossword.
Well, somebody filled it in, and it wasn't me.
Or was it?
Hmm?
Time? 9:03. The merry-go-round is closing in.
Fantastic. Helen, it's 9:03. Do you realize what that means? It means the loop is getting shorter. That last jump back came at least 2 minutes early. I'd say around 9:13. And not only is the repetition interval getting shorter, But as the circle closes in on itself, it's uncovering the real time stream running below it. The stream in which the other eye, unknown to myself here, of course, had solved the clue, stood up, walked over to the mantelpiece, and filled in 17 down. I mean, the proof is right there in the newspaper. Olden Times. See?
Oh. I think I've had enough of this show. It's not very good. You can change the channel if you like.
Did you hear a word I said?
Of course, darling.
Which one?
Oh, don't sulk, Harry. If you wanted to watch something else, all you have to do is ask.
Steady, steady.
I don't think there's any cause for alarm. These eruptions or billows have mass. So I think we can expect a lot of strange optical effects as the light leaving the sun is deflected.
I'm beginning to dislike that man. See, you've put your sewing away, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Good magazine, is it?
Yes, quite good.
Lots of words, pictures.
Yes, Harry, that's what usually comes in the magazine.
Conversation exhausted, I focused my attention on the clock. The next jump back came at 9:10.
You are one.
9:04. I stood, leaning against the mantelpiece, smoking a cigarette I'd never seen before. Helen opened a window.
It's a beautiful night.
Is it really? Look, if no one's watching the damn thing...
Think it absolutely necessary to pull the plug, dear.
Listen to that, Helen.
What? I don't hear anything.
Exactly.
It's such a lovely night, Harry. What do you say we go for a walk in the park?
Oh, if only we could. But each successive jump back gives us a new departure point. Even if we made it as far as the park, the next jump back we'd be right here again. Only this time, we'll have decided to drive to the pub instead.
Harry?
What? Sorry?
You look asleep on your feet. A nice walk will wake you up.
All right. Go and get your coat. I'll wait right here.
Are you going to be warm enough like that?
I doubt we'll be gone that long.
I'll just be a minute.
That should do it. It's 9:08.
Any time now? And I'm back on the sofa.
Of course you are, dear. Where else would you be?
At least the TV's finally off.
I'll just close the window and we'll be going. There. All set. Have you got any money on you?
Should have. How much do you want?
What do you usually pay for drinks? We'll only stay for a couple.
Huh? We're going to the pub, are we?
Didn't we decide not 2 minutes ago that we were going to the pub?
Probably.
Are you all right, dear? You look all strangled. Is that shirt too tight?
Helen, I've got to try and explain something to you. It's becoming too much for me to endure alone.
What is it, Harry?
I don't know why it's happening, but it has something to do with these billows of gas.
Billows of gas? Should I call the doctor?
No, there's nothing the matter with me. How can I make you understand? Everything is happening so fast and I don't think there's much time left. Where'd she go? Helen?
She's in the bedroom. Now get a hold of yourself. It's 9:07.
9:07.
1 minute before the circle is complete.
Harry, you didn't give me an answer. Do you want to or don't you?
Do I or don't I want to what?
I was completely out of touch with what my real self was doing in the normal time channel.
Where do I go? Where do I stand? What do I do?
Face it, Harry. It's not Helen and everybody else who's riding the merry-go-round. It's you.
Harry!
Yes?
She was standing in the doorway, waiting for me.
Are you sure you want to go?
Of course, darling. Go where?
She was standing in the doorway, waiting for me. 9:07. 20 seconds. And counting.
Helen, I don't think I can make it.
Harry, you're shaking.
Only a fraction of a minute left. Push off. That's it. One foot after the other.
Harry.
Helen, don't move. Look. See? I'm starting to walk over to you. walk over to you. Over to you. To you.
Harry?
Huh?
Shh, quiet. Take your time. Here.
Oh.
Let's sit up.
Oh.
How do you feel?
I have just been catapulted from a revolving door. What happened? Did I collapse?
Not exactly. You were watching television and I thought you looked rather seedy. So I suggested we go out for a drink. Then you went into a sort of convulsion.
God, I couldn't have dreamt all that, could I?
What was it about?
A sort of crazy merry-go-round. Hard to explain coherently. Time was... What time is it now?
It's, 9:45.
Really? Is the TV still plugged in?
Of course.
What happened to your show?
Must be over by now. I gave up on it. You know, it's the same thing week after week. Like a drink?
Hmm. A big scotch. I think I've earned it.
I'll just be a moment.
Could it have been a dream? It was so real. I can still remember each round trip perfectly.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Neck still bothering you?
Only when I remember. You know, the whole thing started during that ridiculous soap.
Shh, relax. Don't think about it.
Mm, that feels good.
Your muscles are all tight.
Little more to the right. That's got it.
I didn't know you went in for the circus.
I don't usually. Do you suppose it has anything to do with this female acrobat and the leopard skin panties?
Let that be a warning.
You're very good at this. Mind if I close my eyes?
Be my guest. Well, I didn't think much of that. Now they're doing an encore.
Who are?
That team of acrobats, the something brothers. One of them even slipped both times. How are you feeling?
Better. Mm. I've decided the whole thing was just a bad dream.
Well, what else could it have been, silly? Why do they keep on doing that?
Doing what, dear?
That. They've done it twice already.
I don't think so. This is a slightly different act.
Watch. They slipped here last time.
No, not... That one was a headstand. Here they were stretched out horizontally.
You couldn't have been watching. See, what did I tell you?
I don't know. What did you tell me?
You're not paying attention. There's no point even talking to you.
Sorry.
Oh, come on now. What's this all about? They're repeating the whole thing for the fourth time.
Darling.
What?
Let me just get my arm around you. There now. Cozy?
Uh-huh.
Good. Now, darling, I want you to hold tight.
What for, Harry?
Because this is the merry-go-round, dear. And this time, you're driving.
Escapement by J.G. Ballard. Dramatized by James R. Wallen, starring Barry Baldero as Harry and Joyce Campion as Helen, with Paulina Gillis, Todd Duckworth, Jeremy Henson, Graham Haley, Louisa Martin, and Sam Moses. The series script editor is Sandra Rabinovich. Casting consultant, Beth Russell. Original music was by Timothy Clark. Recording engineer, Bob Lackey. Sound effects by Kathy Perry and production assistant Heather Brown. Escapement was produced in Toronto by series executive producer William Lane. Next week, The Dead Astronaut.
And another break. Hopefully this will be the last one. Coming up next is Maurice Tarpin for Adam Hatz, assuming his persona of the strange Dr. Weird, to tell us a story first told on April the 24th of 1945. It's about some men in desperate straits, in a lifeboat in fact, who come across a mysterious ship afloat in the sea.
The Strange Dr. Weird.
Good evening. Come in, won't you? Why, what's the matter? Your hand is shaking. Surely you're not afraid of me. Perhaps it would steady you to hear a little story that was just told to me. The story of a strange ship that sails the seven seas, with no crew save death, and no passengers except the dead. I call the story The Ghost Ship. My story, The Ghost Ship, begins in a badly battered lifeboat, pitching and tossing on the surface of the South Atlantic. Three men wearily bail out the water which the breaking waves constantly pour into the boat. A fourth man, burly and broad-shouldered, is at the tiller.
All right, bail her, men, bail her. The water's gaining on us.
What's the use of bailing? We'll never make land. Why don't we admit we're done for and it over with?
Stow that, bosun. We may sight a ship any minute.
You've been saying that every day for a week, man.
Captain, Captain!
Yeah, what is it, cook?
They think it's a ship. You snow it's here. They're to port.
All right, look sharp, man.
Oh, I don't see anything. Just another false alarm.
No, no, it's not. Captain Arcee, you're... Yes. It's a small steamer heading this way.
Yeah, I can make her out now. She's heading straight for us.
It's a ship, all right. But she looks mighty funny. Look how low she is in the water. See the way she steers.
She does kind of stagger back and forth.
Maybe her steering gear broke.
And there's no smoke from her funnels either. If you ask me, she's a derelict.
Well, maybe she is. Even a derelict is better than this lifeboat. The wind's carrying across our course. And we're going to board her.
Half an hour later, the lifeboat rubbed against the side of the strange ship. The four hungry, weary men clambered aboard her and found themselves greeted only by the uncanny silence of a deserted ship.
See? What did I tell you? This here's a derelict, a blooming derelict.
Yeah, she's a derelict, all right. Look at her ironwork, covered with rust. I'd say she's been drifting about for a good many months.
Suppose there'd be no grub or water aboard her, that's what worries me.
Now, that's what we're going to find out right now. Cook and I'll search the starboard side of the ship. You other two search the port side. Look lively now. We'll meet the chart room in 30 minutes. All right, bosun, what did you find?
We didn't find nothing. Not a single solitary thing.
That's all right, Captain. Of course, we're so low in the water that all the holes in the cabins below deck are half-flooded. But we searched everything else, and we didn't find a thing.
Well, Cook and I had better luck. We found the galley dry and plenty of canned grub in it. I left Cook rustling up some chow. He'll be bringing us a hot meal any minute now.
Hot food, doggone. That's what I was wanting to hear.
What I want to know is, why was this freighter abandoned? Here, Chick.
What?
What? This is the Mermaid Girl.
What?
Here. There's her name on the logbook. She's a ghost ship. Do you hear me? We come aboard a ghost ship. We've got to get off her or we'll die.
Bosun, get hold of yourself, will you?
I do. This is a Mermaid Girl. And every seaman in the world knows about it.
Well, sir, I don't. Captain, what is this here Mermaid Girl business?
Well, the story of the Mermaid Girl is a curious one. 2 years ago, she had her hull stove in a hurricane, but she's loaded with lumber and cork, which is why she never sunk. Well, the first night out after the storm, one of the crew disappeared.
The next night, two more men went, and two more the night after.
I'm telling this, bosun.
It's true, every word of it.
It's true, the men disappeared. Rest of the crew mutinied and abandoned ship. Only one lifeboat with 5 men in it ever made port. They're the ones who spread the story.
And ever since then, the mermaid girl's been drifting. A ghost ship with death at the helm. I tell you, we've got to get off her, or we'll die too.
Captain!
That's a cook! Quick, outside, something's happened to him. Captain, look! There on the deck, a tray. Dishes and food. Cook was bringing us grub. And now he's vanished.
Say, Doctor, do you know you've been on the air for 25 weeks now? Evidently, people like your radio show.
That makes me very happy. And I thank them from the bottom of my cold-blooded heart.
Coming from you, Doctor, that's really warm sentiment. And while we're about it, the makers of Adam Hats would like to thank the many men who have recognized the superiority of Adam Hats this season. Gentlemen, you've been keeping our thousands of stores and authorized dealers mighty busy. And no wonder. Wide varieties in 100% correct styles, combined with finest quality materials and craftsmanship, make Adam Hats America's outstanding hat value. The well-dressed man particularly appreciates the wide choice of shapes and shades available at their Adam Hat store. Tomorrow, step into the Adam Hat store nearest you and ask to see the new line of Adam Hats, priced sensibly from $3.45 to $10. Now, Dr. Weird, on with the show.
And now to continue my story, the ghost ship. It is night, and in the inky darkness, half submerged, derelict steamship Mermaid Girl drifts onward across the wave-tossed surface of the South Atlantic. Huddled in the chart room, with 2 flickering lanterns for light, the 3 shipwreck survivors discuss the strange disappearance of the cook, the 4th member of their group.
I tell you, the spook got him. Or the devil, or whatever it is that's put a curse on this ship.
It takes more than a spook to make a grown man vanish without trace, bosun.
The sea's different from the land. There's devils that haunt the ocean no land lover can know about. You've heard of the Flying Dutchman, haven't you, Tix?
Uh-huh. Reckon I have. What about it?
For 100 years or more. Manned by phantoms, she's been sailing the 7 seas. Full rigged and always running with the storm dead astern. The devils of the sea put a curse on her. And so the Flying Dutchman will sail on forever.
The Flying Dutchman is just a sailor's superstition, bosun. You know it.
And I suppose this ship we're on now is just a superstition, too. And the fact that she's been drifting for 2 years with no end at her helm. I tell you, we've got to get off her, or else we'll die.
We can't get off her. Our lifeboat swamped when we came aboard. So stow that kind of talk, bosun.
That's what I say, too. I don't believe in spooks or devils. Fact is, I got me a notion to go down to the galley right now and rustle up some grub.
You want the same thing that happened to the cook to happen to you?
Oh, nothing happened to me. Captain, you got an extra revolver in your pocket?
Yeah.
Well, now, just you let me take it and I'll face anything to get me some grub. Well, it's 3 days since we had food, and I'm too hungry to wait for morning.
All right, here's the extra gun. It has 3 shells in it. And take this lantern, but look sharp.
I'll do that, Captain. And I'll bring back whatever I can carry.
Good.
And if I meet any spooks, I'll bring them back, too.
You shouldn't have let him go, Captain.
He'll be all right with a light and a gun. We don't need food.
We'll seek in this ship the ghost ship and... This is...
Come on, we gotta go to his...
No, Captain, it's too late. It's got him, whatever it is that's haunting this ship. And if we got out there now, it'll get us, too.
All night, the 2 men huddled in the chart room, the doors bolted, the memory of Texas screams ringing in their ears. In the morning, with a fog covering the sea, they cautiously emerged and searched the ship, the captain keeping his revolver always ready. And they found...
Nothing. That's what we found, Captain. Nothing but a smashed lantern and the empty gun line on the deck where Texas dropped them.
Well, frankly, I think Tex and the cook went out of their heads and jumped overboard. There's absolutely nothing on this ship that could have harmed them.
But there is. Only it's something you can't see unless it wants you to see it.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Bosun, listen to me. I tell you
that... Wait. What is it? Listen. What is the job?
It's a foghorn. There's a steamship someplace in the fog off the starboard of us.
Get in this way. But you'll never see us. Look how fast the fog's thickening.
Yeah. We got to work fast. There's a hand-operated foghorn up in the bow of this vessel. Get up forward and start sounding it. I'll hunt for distress rockets. We've got to attract attention before that ship gets too far away.
Aye, sir. I'll signal it SOS with the orb, sir.
Good man. Oh, she's passing astern of us. Blast this fog. If it hadn't thickened up so fast, we'd have been sighted.
Captain!
Yeah, what is it, Bosun?
Captain, he's got me! He's sagging me toward the old cabin! Help! Help!
I'm coming, Bosun! Bosun! Bosun, where are you?
Captain! Down here! In the hole! Help me!
In the hole? Bosun! What's happened?
Captain, it's an octopus!
What?
A giant octopus! It's got me down here in the hole! A tentacle caught me. You don't pull me in.
An octopus. So that's it. That's the devil that's been haunting this ship. I can see it, Bosun. Just under the water. I'm going to try and shoot it.
Hurry.
All right. Devil, take that. And that.
It's got
it. My gun's empty. I've got it. Tentacle. Tentacles around my legs. I can't get loose. It's pulling me down into the hole, too. If I can only... I can't. Help!
No wonder the shipwrecked sailors who boarded the Mermaid Girl could find nothing. The devil who haunted her was an underwater devil whose presence they couldn't guess. So the Mermaid Girl still drifts on across the seven seas, with death in the shape of a giant octopus, her captain, and dead men, her only crew. Perhaps someday... Oh, you have to go now. I do hope you'll drop in again soon. Just look for the house on the other side of the cemetery. The house of Dr. Weir.
And this ends the dramatic presentation part of Night Transmissions. Be sure to drop by that webpage, www.nighttransmissions.com. I'm going to leave you now with some music. See you next week, I hope.
holiday, the best day of the year. Little Matty Groves to church did go, some holy words to hear, some holy words to hear. He spied three ladies dressed in black as they came into view. Lord Orland's wife was gaily clad, a flower among the few, a flower among the few. She tripped up to Matty Groves, her eyes so low cast down, saying, pray, oh pray, come with me, stay, as you pass through the town, as you pass through the town. I cannot go, I dare not go, I fear it would cost my life, for I see by the little ring you wear, you are Lord Arlen's wife, you're the great Lord Arlen's wife. This may be false, this may be true, I can't deny it all, but Arlen's gone to consecrate King Henry at Whitehall, King Henry at Whitehall. Oh, pray, come with me, stay. I'll hide thee out of sight. I'll serve you there beyond compare, and sleep with you the night, and sleep with you the night. Her little page did listen well to all that they did say, and ere the sun could rise again, he quickly sped away, he quickly sped away. And he did run the king's highway, he swam across the tide, he ne'er did stop until he came to the great Lord Arlen's side, to the great Lord Arlen's side. What news, my bully boy? What news brings you to me? My castle burned, my tenants robbed, my lady with baby, my lady with baby. No harm has come your house and land, the little page did say, but Matty Groves is bedded up with your fair lady gay, with your fair lady gay. Did lie down, he took a nap asleep, and when he woke, Lord Arlen was a standing at his feet, a standing at his feet. How now, my bully boy? How do you like my sheets? And how do you like my fair young bride? Who lies in your arms asleep? Who lies in your arms asleep? Ah, it's very well, I like your bed, and it's fine, I like your sheets. stroke, Lord Arlen struck. Little Matty struck no more. Little Matty struck no more. Rise up, my gay young bride. Draw on your pretty clothes. Now tell me, do you like me best? Or like your Matty grows? For the dying Matty grows. She picked up Matty's dying head. She kissed from cheek to chin. Said it's Matty Grove I'd rather have than Arlen and all his kin.
Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? I can take you high. Like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and dull, and cut a 6-inch valley through the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. And